question. So those are some of the main ways that there could be biological evolution. Natural selection is not the only way. Genetic drift occurs where the effects of, well, let's talk about mutation first. Mutation is the general term which does not imply random or natural selection. Mutation is general. Natural selection is a subset of mutation. Genetic mutation is a general term for the idea that when genes are replicated, there's going to be random imperfections or random mistakes or random variations in the replication of the genes. That's all mutation talks about. It's important to note that according to scientific thought, that those mutations are random. They're not directed. So again, perhaps offense to the people committed to religious views, but the idea behind the science here is that genetic mutations happen randomly, not for any purpose, not toward any goal. So it's an important concept because sometimes when people don't understand this, they jump straight to natural selection and they think that there's some sort of goal orientation, you know, with adaptation and all that. But it's not goal orientated. It's not Aristotelian. There's no, there's no final cause. It's just random mistakes that happen, imperfections in the duplication process of genes. One view is that at any given time, there's going to be sort of a pool of random mutations, of variations. So for any particular species, at any moment in time, there's a pool of variations, which just occur randomly from imperfections in the duplication of the genes. So the idea that there's a pool of these mutations, that's called a standing genetic mutations. And they are not themselves responses to any environmental pressures. They're not adaptations. They're simply, as I said, random. They sit there. What happens with these standing mutations then is what leads to several mechanisms to cause evolutionary change, of which natural selection is one, but there's others. So genetic drift is another way that intergenerational evolution can occur. That would just be a random process called a genetic drift where mutations carry through to future generations. Again, it's random and there's no design, there's no targeted a goal. It's just drift. So there's random variations. The variations sometimes carry through to future generations with no particular pattern. There's a concept called gene flow, and that happens when members of a population migrate into another population. So you could have a population of organisms, of mammals, of birds, of, microscopic organisms, of insects, and they just happen perhaps because of geographical considerations or migratory reasons. They combine with another population, which then causes gene flow. The genes get mixed up and the variations get mixed up. And there's another way that mutations can cause evolution other than natural selection, which is non-random mating. It's called non-random mating. Members of a species select for certain properties in a mate. So we know about various species where peacock feathers, where males will try and attract females by exhibiting certain traits, or females will try and attract males. So there's certain characteristics or ability to display certain characteristics that certain individuals will have in a species that will preferentially attract mates. So that would be non-random mating, and that would promote the advancement or the propagation of certain character traits. Certain character traits. Again, a way that mutations can carry forward to future generations without natural selection. So if a certain mutation made the feathers more colorful, then that mutation might cause higher, you know, likelihood of mating, that that individual will mate and then produce offspring. That wouldn't be called natural selection because it's not in response to some external pressure, but rather it's just a internal mating, a mating process.
Yeah, that's just internal to the activity of the species itself.
Right.
Okay.
So natural selection finally implies something different, which is normally a external pressure. Now, there's been theoretical and philosophical differences over time as to whether to view this as Darwin did, to view the pressures that produce natural selection as competition for scarcity of resources, or whether it be simply adaptation to environmental conditions. And those are two different ways of viewing it. So Darwin comes from a background where the idea was that there was limited resources, there was more individuals than could be supported or carried by the available resources. And so the survival of the fittest is the, another way of putting this. So only the fittest would survive in a world of finite resources and competition for those finite resources. Another way of looking at the external pressure that doesn't entail so much finite resources, it's simply various pressures, whether it be climate, food availability, various dangers, obstacles in the environment are present, and the organisms that can best adapt to those external pressures are the ones that are more likely to be promoted, to propagate, to survive. So there's two different views around that, but what they have in common is, and this is sort of the nitty-gritty of natural selection, is that there's still no directedness here. What happens is that the random mutations that are best adapted to either the struggle for finite resources in one view or the presence of environmental pressures in the other view, the ones that are best adapted are the ones that will, that offspring, that will produce the individuals who possess those randomly generated mutations are the individuals that are more likely to thrive, to succeed under the conditions described, and then to produce offspring. So what happens as a purely undirected sort of mathematical process is that those particular mutations that are best suited to the environment or to the pressures, those will propagate because those individuals will survive and have more offspring, which will tend to cause the phasing out of less fit variations and the promotion of more fit variations. And then so you have over multiple generations, you have a gradual shift of that species from less fit characteristics to more fit characteristics. And other things happen, like species can die out, they can morph into other species. There's all kinds of complex things that can happen. But the underlying idea behind natural selection and the very important point is that the variations which are generated randomly that are best fit for adaptation to environmental conditions or competition, depending on your view, are the ones that will be promoted not by intent and not by design, but simply by mathematics.
I'm reminded by some research that I know of. I don't know it super well, but the part that I find the most interesting was there was a game theory study with evolutionary modeling where they talked about, essentially, it's like negative versus positive behavior and which ones are more beneficial over the long term. And so I think that the result of the study is what has been called the tit for tat strategy. So if you you start off by behaving nicely to other individuals. And then if other individuals behave nicely, then you continue to behave nicely. You share resources and you get mutual benefit. Whereas if someone acts badly towards you, so they steal your resources, then you act in kind and steal their resources. So yeah, there's definitely been several attempts to model social dynamics according to evolutionary theory in the realm of computer science.
Yeah, you're jumping ahead a little bit to human behavior and to culture, perhaps.
Yeah, I don't want to jump too far ahead. Just what you said about how this is a mathematical description. Something I do think is worth mentioning here is that from the scientific perspective, just because it's mathematical doesn't mean that we have an objective understanding about what's going on. So when we measure the physical world, you know, we can say with some certainty that there are such a thing as electrons, there are such a thing as atoms, and we know when we have one kind of atom versus another kind of atom. I think with evolution, in terms of the term fittest, can change depending on the environment and species and ecosystem that you're talking about, and also like the level of resolution that you're talking about, whether you're talking about an individual competing against a society or a certain society of individuals against another society of individuals. So the term fittest doesn't have a set objective standardized definition the way our words would have when we're studying the physical world. We can still approach things very scientifically, but I think we have to maintain a little bit more humility, perhaps. Just because we know that the fittest are more likely to survive doesn't mean we necessarily know what the next adaptation will lead to creating the next most fit species in a certain situation. There have been several cases in the past where people have tried to predict what would make a certain species more fit rather than others, and that has been somewhat disastrous. I'm not to go into all of the details there. Yeah, it's fairly complex. this type of modeling is fairly complex, so we don't have a full picture of it, which is why discussions like this, I think, are so interesting and so important.
Yeah, and hopefully I'm not being pedantic here, but if we're talking about the term fittest in relation to Darwinian theory, so I'll say I've heard from eavesdropping on an anthropology lecture that Darwin never used the term survival of the fittest, and this professor used the word never 12 times, and that this phrase comes from Herbert Spencer. It could be pedantic because this might not actually change any of the theory at all, but if we're talking about using the word fittest, maybe this has something to do with it.
I think the crucial thing that I'm trying to get to is what made the idea of evolution by natural selection so controversial and so radical in the context of prior beliefs, medieval beliefs around design and intention and Aristotelian concepts of final causes. The idea, which is so objectionable to many people and seems so cold and mathematical, is that evolution occurs without any purpose, without any design, without any intention, without any goal. It just happens for what I'm calling mathematical reasons. Maybe it's not quite only mathematical, as you guys are pointing out. I think to fully understand what Darwin was proposing, you need to really understand that there is no purpose, that there is no goal, there's no final cause. This is quite contra Aristotle, right? There is no, contra Plato, right? There's no ideal human form that is being strived for. What we now know to be genetic changes in DNA and genes, happen randomly, not directedly and not with intent. And which ones of those variations are selected for, which ones propagate forward, happen merely because of starkly mechanical, mathematical, physical reasons, and not for any reason having to do with a goal or with what's right or what's good, as, you know, as the scholastics like to talk about good. So that's really the radical concept, even radical today. I think a lot of people today are quite reluctant to believe that, even though they might say, well, sure, I believe in science, I believe in evolution. I think a lot of people, my theory is, are very reluctant to say that there's no purpose, there's no design, there's got to be some purpose or goal or reason for existence and reasons why things move the way they move. And this will apply to cultural, when we get there, I think it's going to be episode 2 at best. This applies, I think, to cultural evolution too, which was that is that there's many, many people who believe that cultures are changing towards some common good. Cultures are improving, moving closer toward what's just and good in the world. The question is, and will be when I do get to comparing cultural evolution and relating it to biological evolution, will be, is there an analogy to be drawn? Is culture as cold and stark and unintentional and mechanical as I think Darwin argued natural selection was?
The theory of evolution doesn't discount the ability of individuals to have goals or to have objectives, or to act in a manner like towards their instincts or even as in, like against their instincts to some degree. Although I guess that might be an interesting thing to talk about is, do humans possess some type of understanding towards going against their instincts? Like what is the nature of human beings? My point anyway, but that distracts from my point, which is that evolution isn't a indictment against thinking in goals. Rather, I think it's an alternative explanation which takes you out of the individualist perspective to a more abstract universal perspective. It's a different frame of understanding. Well, it's just a different frame of understanding of thinking and an alternative frame. And so I think it's well suited to certain areas of study. It might be less well suited to things like the individual human experience.
I wanted to qualify what I said about evolution being cold and stark and mechanical with this. If one views the world, the world of organisms and life and ecosystems and biological communities as being an exercise in cooperation rather than competition, which is a possible way to look at it. So as I asserted before, Darwin came from a background where the idea was that there was limited or finite resources which weren't sufficient to sustain the rate of population increase. And so what checks population increase is the finite amount of resources. And so those individuals that are the most fit will survive and be able to obtain the necessary resources, and those with less fitness will not survive. And I understand, Brandon, your claim that the term survival of the fittest was coined by somebody other than Darwin. I'll accept that. But I still assert that Darwin,
it's a useful term for talking about what you're talking about. So
right,
I don't think
right.
that it's, I mean, again, I think I was being a bit pedantic, but it's just that we were talking about the word that I felt entitled to talk, do a bit of pedantry.
Sure, sure. But I think what I'm trying to say here is that we can find some warmth and meaning in this way without being inconsistent with my, you know, view, my representation of natural selection by random mutation. If one gets lost in nature, right, you go out into the wilderness and you experience the sounds and sights and smells of the, you know, multitude of living beings that are there in the ecosystem in which you're visiting, right? You could see that as an amazing amount of cooperation, of interdependence, how one life form sustains another life form. There's this complex web of sustenance, of cooperation. Sure, it's going to involve some life forms eating other life forms. There's going to be prey, right? And there's going to be those that are preyed upon. But that doesn't have to be looked at as a cruel thing or a negative thing. It can be looked at as cooperation. So one can have that view and find beauty and symmetry and harmony in a natural ecosystem. It's not necessary that one views wilderness or a natural area or a natural ecosystem as a cold, calculating, competitive, survival of the fittest, eat or be eaten kind of environment. So that's my point, is one can still find beauty and harmony and positive things in nature if one chooses, without being inconsistent with the underlying concept, which is that there's no design or no intent or no designer for how this is all happening. It's in fact, it can be even thought of as more amazing that all this can exist without being designed. It's amazing. And that's still not inconsistent with the claim that there's no designer. I wanted to give an example of a couple examples of how events can happen such that there's not enough time for there to be adaptation through natural selection and extinctions can occur. So one example would be the extinction of dinosaurs. And not only dinosaurs became extinct during a period about 66 million years ago, but also other marine mammals and microscopic plankton. There was a whole line from microscopic plankton up to dinosaurs along a food chain where there was mass extinctions. And it is now believed that the most likely explanation was an asteroid collision, an asteroid which was, I think, about 5 to 7 kilometers wide, which hit in what we now call the Yucatan Peninsula in Mexico. So when that happened, it caused chain reaction. It also happened in the context of what existed, which was a lot of volcanic eruptions that were happening in that period. So when you combined all those things, it was a perfect storm, which caused changes in the food distribution and ultimately led up the food chain to the extinction of marine mammals and dinosaurs, certain marine mammals and dinosaurs. Those changes were so quick in the volcanic eruptions and then the meteor impact were very quick, and there was not enough time for a process of natural selection to take place, and therefore the very species completely died out. So that's an example of how species can die out, where natural selection does not have the time to operate. So that helps us get an understanding of what natural selection is about and what its limitations are, what its constraints are, the amount of time and generations that it takes. What might be a current example, many believe, of environmental change happening more quickly than living species can adapt to would be anthropogenic global warming. Research is increasingly showing that the effects of anthropogenic global warming, changes in the heat budget, changes in wind patterns, changes in ocean currents, rising of the sea levels, increase in interval and severity of extreme weather events, prolonged drought, all of those things can be considered environmental pressures, which, given enough time, organisms and species would be able to adapt to in the sense, in the way that I described before, which was that from standing variations, those variations which are best adapted to such extreme weather events and drought and so on would be the ones that would propagate forward. But there's a growing belief in the scientific community that natural selection is not going to happen fast enough. The adaptations are not going to happen fast enough relative to the speed with which the climate is being altered, and the result will be die out of many species, possibly even humans. So that's how this is relevant to today, how natural selection is relevant, and this aspect of natural selection, which is the requirement for a sufficient amount of time for it to be effective, if we take effective to mean the continuation of a species rather than the extinction of a species.
Yeah, I just had one quick comment, and that's that I want to thank you, Michael, for bringing this topic to the show. I think it's something that I don't think a lot of people first think of when they consider philosophy and where we live in the modern world. And I think this will be pretty valuable for some of our listeners in terms of just enriching their philosophical knowledge and their understanding. So thanks you for bringing this to our attention. And I look forward to the next episode and seeing where we get to.
Thank you for listening to this episode one of my theory and research around biological and cultural evolution. I'm Michael Robert Kaditz with Brandon Brownlee and Aaron Wang. Thank you, everyone. You've been listening to the Canadian Philosophy Show. The Canadian Philosophy Show at tcps.podbean.com and on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Please email us at hello@philosophyshow.ca.
Appreciate your generosity. Each year for a week, we host Fundrive, our annual fundraising campaign that boosts our budget and supports Independent Radio. Thank you for your support.